your say now. Text or WhatsApp Kildare today on 0833 97 97 97.
Okay, some of the messages coming in. We had JJ's one about the rise of pricing. Yes, doesn't it just reassure you that BP can make $9.3 billion in 3 months profit, net profit after paying taxes? And then we ask for explanations why we're still paying €2 a litre generally for fuel, whether it be diesel or petrol. It's because basically there is profit gouging going on without a shadow of a doubt. Otherwise, how are they making €9.3 billion profit? The same could be said in the grocery market, by the way, as well. Mick says, I've had swallows nesting in his shed and I've had them for the last 2 years. The trick is to leave the shed door or window open to allow them access, because they feed day and night on the wing. Yes, but Mick, our back shutter is open all day, but there's no swallows flying in and out. Kira.
Yes, can you hear me now?
I can.
So Damien has also been in touch about the medical issue. There is no real free public care in hospital unless you have a medical card, he says. If you have no medical card and don't give your health insurance detail, you still receive a bill for each day you spend in the hospital, as well as a bill for the A&E. And also we have been in touch here from Mary, and she says, I'm beginning to think we sanctioned ourselves and Russian economy is doing fine. ? And then, unfortunately, Clem, there's one that's coming here, Osquelga. I know is he said, 'tis a fine discussion. Morning, Namaja, Diva Karja. So, very happy good morning to you, my friends. Is that right?
Right, okay.
Shannon O'Christine here. I'm listening on Goshlan Nua.
Good dog, in Newcastle County, Dublin.
Oh,
he is.
Oh, damn it.
Yeah. Okay. But also, we have a message here on benchmarking, Kira. If that's available to you.
Yeah, so it says, good morning, benchmarking social welfare, I agree. But to be fair to workers, social welfare payments should be set at a workers' tax-free allowance, which is only €80, or increased tax-free allowance to €203 before they pay tax. The system, this texter says, is unjust to workers.
All right, and the text coming in. Hi, Clem and Kira, just to let you know, I can't remember when I had so many swallows this year. They made a huge mess and most moved on. And KFM, they're going to have to talk at some stage about this war between Russia and Ukraine, or do you want it to go on for many years, says May in regards to that. Okay, let's change tack for the moment now, because talking about energy prices there, according to Simon Carswell, writing the Irish Times over the weekend, soaring energy and food costs are threatening the future of private and voluntary nursing homes, which require urgent government support to survive, the representative body has found. They have said the representative body, of course, is Nursing Homes Ireland, and its CEO is well known to this programme, Tadhg Daly. Good morning, Tadhg.
Good morning, Tim. Good to speak with you.
Thanks for taking our call. Now, talks between yourselves and the Department of Health, they've been going on quite a while now, since March.
Yeah, well, we met the Minister on the 29th of March, actually, and we had a very, very positive meeting with Minister Butler and officials. And to use her own language, she said she was acutely aware at that time of the inflationary pressures. I suppose your listeners will be aware that under the Fair Deal, in effect, the government is the paymaster. So the fees that are set and the fees that are paid through the Fair Deal have been negotiated in a completely different timeline completely. So, as you say, the minister was very attentive, understood completely where we were coming from, and at that stage, I suppose we were expecting something to be done by the start of the summer. However, we are a little bit concerned that there seems to be some slippage in terms of putting a package of measures together. But that said, we still have very good engagement. The fact that the minister, fully appreciates where we're coming from and the need to maintain service continuity, given the critical role of nursing homes, we'd be confident that we would come to a satisfactory conclusion of an agreement, that would assist private and voluntary nursing homes to continue to maintain and to address the unprecedented inflationary pressures right across society.
There are 460 private and voluntary nursing homes, and your organisation cares for around 24,000 people, and
that's
it's
correct.
Costing the Exchequer about $1.4 billion a year. Now, that's based on previous money, Tadhg. It's extremely significant support.
Oh, it is, absolutely. And that's that $1.4 billion is actually for the public, private and voluntary. But yeah, it is a significant. The Fair Deal was introduced back in 2009. a very, very significant programme. But it's there to ensure that people who have been assessed as requiring nursing home care can get access to nursing home care in a timely fashion. Mm-hmm. So it's a hugely important scheme. I mean, we know, for example, at the moment, there's significant pressure on acute hospitals in terms of people on trolleys. So if you didn't have a well-functioning nursing home sector providing high-quality care, then it would have a huge impact across the wider health service.
And are you just basically being alarmist in saying the sustainability of nursing home providers is threatened by the high levels of inflation?
No, I'm not. And in fact, you know, just last week again, a nursing home in Westmeath closed. Just a number of weeks ago, a nursing home in Galway. So there's been, you know, this year alone, there's been four smaller nursing homes that have closed. Have actually closed their doors. No, I'm not saying that's solely down to inflation, but it's a huge, huge factor. Many of the smaller homes in particular are finding it increasingly difficult to continue. And that's what we're fearful of. You know, on the one hand, we have an ageing population, an ageing demographic, and on the other hand, we're seeing a significant number of nursing homes closing. So, and look, this is about, we all understand, every day you pick up your newspaper, every day you go out onto the street yourself. I mean, government have accepted that there are significant inflationary pressures, and the nursing home sector is uniquely different to most other sectors. I mean, you know, obviously hospitality has having huge challenges, but, you know, they can close on a Monday and Tuesday, for example. You've heard that, restaurants deciding or pubs deciding to close. I mean, nursing home care is 24/7. You know, you can't turn off the lights. You know, you don't turn off the heating. So the bills keep coming, and we've seen inflation generally is running at somewhere like 9.6%. We've seen energy, for example. Many of our members are telling us that they've had a threefold increase in the cost of energy. So there are significant challenges there, but I'd be confident that based on our discussions with the Minister, I'd be very, very confident that they do get it, as it were, that they understand the challenges that are there, and that there will be some measures put in place on a temporary basis initially to alleviate and to offset some of the unprecedented inflation that we're now experiencing.
But if members, and I'm just pulling this figure on the basis of what one listener has just sent in to a particular nurse, saying they're paying to a particular nursing home, I'm not going to name it, obviously.
Yes.
But, you know, 1,200, 1,300 a week,
yes.
Tig,
yes.
Seems, you know, very, very significant money that individuals are paying to nursing homes for by the week.
Well, I think there's two things there. One is the cost of a stay in an acute hospital per night is of the order of €900 per day. So the acute hospital system is something of the order of €7,000 per week. And the public nursing homes are of the order of €1,600 and €1,700 per week. So, you know, and we've got to understand here that care is an expensive commodity, if you like. I mean, what we're talking about is the care of our older citizens who have high dependency care needs. But what we're seeing now, Clem, and as I say, we see it every day of the week, this isn't news to anybody, there's inflation. But when you look at energy, light and heat, when you look at consumables, I mean, our members are getting deliveries from companies every day of the week saying another 5%, another 10%, another 12%. So all of these costs have to be borne by the nursing home. They're not in a position to pass those costs on because they have already agreed a race with the National Treatment Purchase Fund under the Fair Deal.
And nobody will argue with that for a minute, because anybody who walks out to buy anything in a shop, particularly groceries and stuff like that, will see that everything is gone up. But I suppose the core question, Ty Daly, is if you've been impacted by that rise in costs, and nobody doubts that for a moment, putting it at between 10% and 22%, is the service that's provided to the people who are availing of nursing homes, is that being impacted negatively? Has that been downgraded in any way?
Well, I'd be confident at the moment that members are maintaining service continuity. But, you know, in the longer term, if there isn't a package of measures put in place, then I would be very, very concerned that it may impact on both the quality and standard of care. You know, and that's something that no one can countenance. That's something that we don't want to countenance. And that's why we've been engaged, you know, and this isn't just yesterday. We've been positively engaged. And to be fair, you know, it is important to acknowledge Minister Butler has been hugely positively engaged as well since March. So we'd be confident that something will happen in the next number of days, hopefully, or next number of weeks at the outset.
According to Simon Carswell's report, Health Minister Stephen Donnelly told the Cabinet on last Wednesday that there's already an overrun of 366 million billion in the state's healthcare budget, and that's just for the first half of the year. Just one wonders where the 20 billion plus that's poured into the health service goes. We saw at the weekend reports of significant tensions within the health department, apparently between junior ministers and senior ministers as well, with Anne Rabbit, a major article in Sunday's Independent. Apparently she's not getting on too well with the Department of Health Secretary there, Robert Watt. But anyway, that's for another day. So have you any meetings imminent?
Yeah, well, we'd be hoping that this week again we'll be. Look, we're in constant engagement. To be fair, and you know, I'm speaking with the minister's advisors and the ministers and the officials on a couple of times a week at this point in time. So, you know, it is important that something is addressed pretty quickly, so that we can, you know, inform members and they can continue to do what they do well, which is continue to provide care in the community to all our citizens.
All right. On that note, CEO of Nursing Homes Ireland, Tadhg Daly, thanks for joining us again this morning, Tadhg, and good morning to you in regards to that. And certainly there would be concern, of course, if the quality or the level of service to people who are availing of this. You know, 1,200 and 1,300 euro a week, you'd have a... Well, of course, it's not just food that's provided. There's medical care and everything else provided. So I don't want to be trite about that or whatever else. But another listener says, nursing homes struggling to get staff because the staff receive the lowest pay of any other healthcare setting. We'll see what happens about that. Well, on Friday's programme, we discussed with the Competition and Consumer Protection Commission of knowing your rights when you're buying products and what rights you have in regards to that. And just time got the better of us because we also wanted to discuss the something that's impacting tens of thousands of people in this country who might have current accounts or deposit accounts with KBC and Ulster Bank, and they're now departing Ireland. And unless you have somewhere else to put your money, well, what's going to happen next? Well, in the last 10 days or so, the CCPC has published new research shows that the majority, 81% of Ulster Bank and KBC current account customers plan to switch. However, less than half, 44%, have opened a new account. Planning to do something is not quite the same, obviously, as doing it. And welcome back to the programme, Gráinne Griffin, Director of Communications with the Competition Consumer Protection Commission. Gráinne, good morning again.
Good morning.
Thanks for taking the call. Only half of that, 44%, have actually opened a new account so far. What we're looking at here in the coming months is a huge bottleneck as people maybe try to find a new home for their money.
That's right. There's hundreds of thousands of people who need to make this move and who need to make it pretty soon over the next couple of months. So what we're saying to people is, if you haven't taken action yet, then your first step is to have a look at what current accounts are available to you, make your decision and get that new account open.
Now you have then to pick your new bank. That's the bank you want to go. Because how long does the switching process take, by the way?
The switching process can take a couple of months. And I suppose if you think about it, maybe if your electricity bill comes every 2 months, say, for example, you get your bill, you pay it, then you get in touch with your new account details. By the time your next bill comes and you're actually totally 100% certain that they have your new account details and everything working properly, that's 2 months later. So really from start to finish, it can take at least that length of time. And I suppose our research did show that people are generally aware of that. Like most people did recognise that this was something that was probably going to take months rather than weeks.
One of the big complicating factors is many people will have direct debits on their accounts. Now, I've heard reports over recent months when this topic came up for discussion that people could find themselves in a rather awkward situation, that if their direct debit is uncollectible by companies, that it could affect people's credit ratings. So what are you advising?
Yeah, there's all sorts of consequences that can happen if your bank account stops working or if you and you haven't made this switch over to a new account. I mean, I suppose worst case scenario before you even get into direct debits or anything like that is most people get paid into a bank account, whether they get paid by their job or they get paid by their pension or maybe a social welfare payment. An awful lot of us, most of us, are dependent on a certain amount of money coming into our account exactly when it's supposed to. So you need to make sure that you have a new account so that when your KBC or Ulster Bank account closes, that your money is coming into your new account and you have cash to spend. So that's the most important thing. After that then, we have all these different commitments in our lives and they go from the very small, like maybe your Leap card or your bus ticket is automatically topped up from your bank account, to the absolutely critical, like your mortgage payment and your health insurance and like these really fundamental things. And if you don't give your new account details over to the company that's going to make those very important debits from your account, and they still make it off the old account and the account is closed or there's no money left in it or anything like that, it will bounce. So that can have all sorts of unintended impacts. I mean, I suppose worst case scenario, like you're looking at potentially a loss of cover on your insurance, or you are looking at potentially something that would affect your credit rating. I mean, that really is, though, at the end of the line.
All right.
Most of the direct debit originators, the companies that set up direct debits, they're well aware of this and they are there ready and waiting to help people to make the change. But you do need to start looking at it now, because where you expect to see problems is if everyone leaves it to the last minute.
All right. You have five steps which are listed on your website, ccpc.ie. The first one is to do with direct debits, which we've just been talking about, which is step one. Make a list of your direct debits, no matter what they are. That's very important, first of all. Now, step two is creating a contact list. What's that about?
So I suppose you've got your new account, you've worked out what you want, is it a joint account, Google Pay, all the rest of it, you've got it open, and now you're ready to make the switch. So the first thing you do is you list all the direct debit companies that need to be updated. So that might be your electricity, your mortgage, your house insurance, whatever it is. So you know exactly what ones you have to go through. Now you can either contact them yourself and give them your new account details, or you can use a transfer pack for a lot of the main banks, and they can do the contacting for you in the first instance, but you still have to follow up. So that's your direct debits. Then that contact list, that's really about all those companies that are signed up to your debit card and not actually to your bank account. And I think it's so easy to forget about this, that a lot of the time when we sign up for services and things now, we don't actually fill in a form and send over our bank account details. We just type in our debit card details. So for example, Netflix, or for like a lot of the things on the App Store, things you might buy through your phone, maybe even the gym in some cases, they actually have your debit card details, not your bank account details. And you need to contact them all directly, generally by logging in online and give them your new account details. So that's what the contact list is all about. It's about who do you need to proactively contact and give your new card details to.
Right. Now, I didn't realise that under the central bank switching code, you can actually ask your new bank to switch your direct debits for you.
You can. So there's a really strong onus on the banks to support this process. Like this is a pain. It is a lot of administration and it is going to take quite a while, but everyone has to go through it. But the banks are obliged to support you, and that's both the departing banks and the new banks that you're moving to.
So in the simple terms, that means if I go to my new bank, I can say, here's my list of direct debits. Can you arrange for these to be switched to this account, please?
Yeah, you don't actually even need to make the list in most cases. For any of the financial institutions that are covered by the central bank switching code, and look, that's most of them, all of the ones that are based in Ireland in any case, or most of them that are based in Ireland, you actually just go in and ask for a transfer pack. And then they open up your new account and you give them your old account details and they contact your old bank. And between the two of them, they write out your direct debit companies and they reset up your standing orders. Now, the only thing we'd say to you about that is there's a lot of people doing that. They will contact all of your companies, but it is important to follow up to make sure that the company still takes action, because obviously the bank can only do so much. They can tell the company that here's this person's new account details, but it's still a good idea to follow up with the company directly to make sure that they've actually made the change.
Yeah, and another thing about direct debits, by the way, they come out of your account on different dates. So all of that needs to be affirmed into it. The one thing that's becoming clear from all of this discussion, trying to do it a week before the banks head off out of the country is not going to work, folks. You need, if you have an account with KBC or Ulster Bank, you need to be beginning this process now, because it might not be as easy as you think to set up or to find a new bank. Now,
there's a lot of people. There's a lot of different options out there, and we really would say to people, take your time with the decision, because you need to work out what you need before you make this decision. You don't want to be changing twice because you didn't go to a bank that suits you. For example, if you need a joint account, only some service providers will offer them. If you want to be able to pay for items with your phone using Apple Pay or Google Pay, like, not all providers offer that. So you do need to make sure you make the right decision beforehand.
And finally, you also advise under your five-step plan on your website to try and keep money in both accounts for at least a period of time.
Yeah, if you can afford it, if you can afford it, the easiest way to stop anything from bouncing on from either account, your new account or your old account, while you go through this process is to have some money in both accounts. So say, for example, if you know your electricity bill is due, you know it's €150. If you have €150 in both accounts, just in case, that is the safest way to go about it. But look, obviously not everyone's in a position where they can afford to do that. So that is only for people who can afford to do it. Some people maybe have savings put away for kind of unexpected expenses. And this might be a time when you maybe take them out to have that buffer. Just remember to put them back in the savings account once you've gone through the process.
And not now when your next ESB bill will be probably €100,000 and stuff like that with the way energy charges are going. You can find all about the details and how to switch your accounts from KBC and Ulster. Find your new provider. All the information is on the Consumer and Competition and Consumer Protection Commission website, which is ccpc.ie, including those five steps in transferring your direct debits and other things like that. And Gráinne Griffin, Director of Communications with the CCPC, thanks again for joining us. Gráinne, good morning to you.
Good morning. Thanks very much for having me.
You're welcome indeed, and have a good week. Fintan Brett, Fine Gael Councillor on the NACE MD and Kildare County Council. Good morning to you, Fintan.
Good morning, Clem.
Thank you for joining us on the programme this morning. Now, Fintan, we're here to a number of things. First of all, Kildare County Council has recently launched or set out its housing, what they call an ambitious housing delivery plan, which will see almost 3,000 social and affordable homes delivered across the county over the next 5 years. How good is that?
Well, I suppose, Clem, to put it in context, Housing for All, a new housing plan for Ireland, was published in September 21, and it was an A to Z review of what can be done to get houses built in this country. And the first part of that was for each council to, they were given a target and to publish their targets on that. And Kildare were given a target of 2,416. So last week they published their Housing Action Delivery Plan 22-26, and they, from what they can deduct from their documents and all that, they're saying they can deliver 2,108, which leaves them about 300 short. But what they're doing, they have taken all the housing list in Kildare at the moment. There's 6,476, which includes HAP tenancies on the housing list, and that. So they've broken that down, and they have what they've done. They've taken it. It's a massive document. They've gone through every town and village, and taken out every person that's on the housing list. And this is their aim. Literally, they're saying between 500 and 600 houses a year Kildare will have to do. Nationally, they're saying 30,000 a year for 10 years. And I suppose people would say, you know, that'll never happen and that. But actually, the first report of quarter one this year from the government has shown that the commencement has exceeded 30,000 between 2021 and 2022, February 2021 and February 2022. There's over 30,000 commencement, which, despite all the happenings in the world, is very good news for everybody. And the only way we can go, I think, is up, because Solace is up and running and training more apprentices. So it's a good news story in
yeah,
so
it
far
is.
As we are getting over the 30,000.
But in an associated aspect of it, Councillor Suzanne Doyle was on the programme here last week, and she was making the point that the county development plan is predicated basically on population increase of 2,500 a year or whatever else, whereas in fact it's increasing at double that. And while the plan is ambitious, questions would arise with 24,500 people having moved into the county since 2016 census, according to the new preliminary census, as to whether it's going to be anywhere near enough. And also the aspect that many local authorities, including Kildare, are leasing houses from private developers, paying enormous money over 25 years to rent them, and at the end of 25 years they don't even own the houses. It goes back to the developers. So there are things that need to be addressed, Fintan.
Absolutely. But the leasing, it's to a certain extent dead money. My feeling on leasing is that if they it's a 25-year lease claim. My feeling, if we can do 30,000 at the moment with the way the country and the Ukrainian war is, that can only get better. And if it's a 10-year program, if after the 10 years we're back on song insofar as that we're building more houses than there's needed, and that it took, we've had this discussion before when in 2003 when the council housing program was stopped, and that which is the greatest disaster, I always say. We had a tsunami from the crash for 7 or 8 years of no housing being built. It takes 10 years to get it back. When we get it back, there's only 10 years gone at that lease. My understanding and my belief is that council and government then will be able to buy those houses, and that leasing thing can be abolished or got rid of. And that, I just think that that is the plan there. It's not stated there, but that's...
Well, I know the Minister has said, Minister O'Brien has said that it's hoped to start phasing it out practically by 2025. I think it's a crazy idea that you would pay this enormous rents to these multinational housing developers, and at the end of 25 years they say, thanks very much, we still own the house. Crazy.
Well, you look at the other side of that. There was 49 of them here in Johnstown, and I have been up to them, and you said anything like that to those people who are on their knees saying,
I know,
come in,
looking for houses,
look at my fabulous house, look at my, because there's no doubt about it, the houses, the standard of houses being delivered is absolutely brilliant, I'd have to say.
All
that
right.
And those people, now one other thing I'd like claim that your leaders, readers or listeners would be interested in, the breakdown, it really caught my eye. One bed of the housing need that the council did, those 42% of the needs is one bed, two beds 37%, three beds unbelievably was only 17%. Now, after looking, and four beds 4%. Now, looking at the record on it, and the council made a very good point, is that they didn't believe that three beds was only 17, because in families where you have a boy and a girl up to 10, they can share a room. So they are allowing actually the 30%. But it shows the change from when I was in the housing, that it was all either a three bed or a four bed. There was no mention of one or two beds. Now 30% one bed, 30% two bed, and the council are going to allow 30% for three bed. It's a completely utter changed market, and it just shows you how things are changing in world and in the country.
In the document which I'm reading here in front of me, in the Housing for All social housing delivery targets for 2022, the council hopes to build 370, 262 on long leasing. In 2023, build 400, lease 86. In 2024, build 409, don't lease any. Similarly, in 2025, build 440, no leasing. 2026, build 449, no leasing. For a total build by 2026 of another 2,068 houses and long-term leasing of 348, to bring the total over the next couple of years to 2,416. The council has a social housing list of 6,476. Households, and I might have a closer look at that programme, because as Fintan has said, it lists out what's going on in every town and village and in the municipal district. For example, social housing in Athy, 882 households. Selbridge, Leixlip, 950. Clane Maynooth, 1,167. Kildare Newbridge, 2,304. Naas, 1,173. That's a total of 6,476 social housing households in the county. And I'll have a look at the towns and villages on the other side of the 10 o'clock news. Also, of course,
and Clem, also 2,568 vacant properties in this county on that there. And you mentioned there a tie, the numbers of people on the list there. There's 539 vacant properties in that town. That is why 30,000 is being granted there now for vacant property, and 50,000 for a derelict property to try and bring them back in. The town centre first, the Cree Conaghy, those initiatives are going to make a difference, I hope, because that's a substantial amount of money to try and get every property that's vacant, and there's a vacant housing officer now in the council that will go after those properties.
How many vacant properties did you say are in assignment?
2,000, in a tie, the vacant properties in a tie.
Did you say 500?
539.
Vacant properties?
Yeah, number of vacant, 539, Selbridge 239, Kildare 149, Maynooth 230, Newbridge 427. If Newbridge 427, if they could be brought into play, it would reduce the housing in that town by almost 20%.
All right, they're staggering numbers altogether. I look closer at this report on the other side of the 10 o'clock news. But meanwhile, Fine Gael Councillor on the Naismith Municipal District and the Kildare County Council. Fintan, I know, even though I'm over for news, but I know that you wanted to say a quick word of congratulations to Sonia Kavanagh, who has been appointed the permanent Chief Executive of Kildare County Council.
Yes, indeed, and on behalf of all the councillors there, look, I suppose for Kildare, it's a good news story. A local born and bred lady who started in the council as a clerical officer and worked her way up, and now she has the top job in it, and it's a name for any young man or woman starting off, that if you aim high and you put the effort in, you can reach the top. And she's done wonderful in getting the job. And as the mayor of the county and as a Fine Gael councillor, we have, and I think all groups have agreed that we'll sit down when she comes back from holidays and we'll go through what we can do. And one of the things that I'm saying to all councillors, that all we talk about is positive, and we push to make Kildare and make her 7 years as the CEO a very positive and lucrative one for Kildare.
Well said, Mayor of Kildare, Fintan Brett, Fine Gael Councillor, and our congratulations indeed extended to Sonia Kavanagh, who was on the programme a couple of weeks back with us, and we wish her well in her 7 year tenure as a woman leads Kildare County Council as Chief Executive Officer over the next 7 years. Fintan, thanks for your time this morning. Well done on all of that. And
thank you.
Just to mention, by the way, that this year alone, also already underway are social housing delivery at Flintersfield in Athy, also at Castlefen in Salins, and there's an affordable cost rental delivery at the Paddocks in Newbridge as well.